The Hugh Hewitt Show on the Salem Radio Network returns from break in 15 seconds. The Hugh Hewitt Show returns from break in 5 seconds.
We are back on the Hugh Hewitt radio program. I am Kurt Schlichter, guest host here today. I'm a retired United States Army colonel, and one of the things I did serving our country for almost 27 years is a lot of disaster relief operations. I was in the Los Angeles riots. I was in the Los Angeles earthquake. I commanded two reinforced battalions in northern San Diego during the San Diego fire crisis. I planned disasters. I practiced disasters. I wrote about disasters in a law review and in professional journals. I did a lot of disaster stuff, and I watched Hurricane Ian and the response to it, and I got to tell you, folks, I was very, very impressed, which is why I'm so proud to bring aboard a naval veteran and the governor of the Free State of Florida, Governor Ron DeSantis. Welcome to the Hugh Hewitt radio program.
Well, good morning. Thanks for having me. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Governor DeSantis, and of course, I played the Anchors Away as a tribute to your naval service. And I, of course, the Navy is an important support arm to the decisive military force, the United States Army.
Well, we'll see in December how the game goes, so I'm looking forward to that one.
Well, look, I was Officer Cadet at school. I really don't care what happens with West Point. But Governor DeSantis, I was watching your disaster relief operations, and I said to myself, this is a man who sat through many, many staff briefings, decision briefs, course of action briefs. How did your military service, training, and experience help you with this response to Hurricane Ian?
Well, I think a couple things. I mean, number one, what happens when we go into a state of emergency for a hurricane, I designate the division, the director of the Division of Emergency Management as kind of the chief coordinating officer. So he's reporting directly to me. And then what we do is all other state agencies effectively report directly to him. So we have a clear chain of command. It used to be that you'd have someone kind of doing disaster and then like the governor's having to like talk separately to all these agencies. And that's just not how we do it in Florida. All of those people are all hands on deck. We have a very clear chain of command when we're in a state of emergency. And so you see things like you're staging folks. Our National Guard is staged, ready to go for search and rescue. We have urban search and rescue teams that were literally on the road at midnight on the Wednesday the storm hit, driving through tropical storm force winds to be able to get to places like Fort Myers Beach. We also have Florida Fish and Wildlife officers who, these are waterborne operators who will go, and when you have barrier islands that are in distress, you know, they're there. So they're all there ready to go, and then when the storm passes, immediately go into search and rescue operations. And I'm not necessarily in control of utility companies, but because we're marshaling every resource in the state, we had 42,000 linemen that were in the state of Florida, many of them from places like Texas and Alabama, staged and ready to go, which was also a difficult thing because if you remember the track of the storm, you know, at one point there were models taking it to the Florida Panhandle. It ended up going in southwest Florida, cutting across the state. So we have a big, long peninsula. You got to be very nimble. But what that let us do is as soon as the storm passed, you had these power crews going in. So you had almost 3 million power restorations in really a matter of days, which was unprecedented. And so a lot of it's preparation, making sure you have the resources ready to go pre-stage that can be brought to bear for the rescue and response, but then just having a clear chain of command. That makes it run so much more efficiently.
Well, Governor DeSantis, you know, if you're planning a battle, if you're a general, and you're kind of the equivalent of a four-star, really, you know where the battle's going to be, and you kind of know when it's going to be. But you were presented with a problem set that was completely different. You had a massive storm. You didn't know its intensity. You didn't know where it was going to land. You had a huge swath of land that you had to cover. And not only were you working with military capabilities, but you had to bring in a whole interagency and approach. You had to deal with the federal government, you had to deal with non-governmental organizations, and you had to deal with businesses. So your job was exponentially harder in some ways than, say, a Corps commander in contact. How did you approach that? Did you use a formal military decision-making process, or did you do it in some other way?
Well, one of the things that we did that I don't think they used to do in the past, you know, we actually had the two-star admiral for the Coast Guard for a region in Tallahassee in our Emergency Operations Center, and that allowed us to help coordinate the rescue operation. So, you know, you had National Guard, we had Chinook helicopters going into these barrier islands, we had boats going in with our fish and wildlife, but you had a lot of Coast Guard assets that were being brought to bear, some of the urban search and rescue teams being brought to bear. So we basically looked, okay, I control certain assets, and then there's other assets that are basically want to be there to help, and we need to be working together with them as well. And then you're right, you have all this stuff in the private sector, which if you're talking about a storm of this magnitude, there's of course a lot of damage. Storms of this magnitude produce, sadly, fatalities, and they produce people that lose everything. But if you look at the path of the storm, I mean, it probably affected 10 million people in terms of it going over. Fortunately, you know, the vast, vast majority of those people did not lose their home and did not lose life or limb. And so the issue is, the more we can get those people back to normal with the power, water, and the normal clearing the roads, then all the other things we're doing for search and rescue, for helping people that have been displaced, those become so much more achievable. If you go in a situation where it's like 3 or 4 weeks where someone who had barely tropical storm force winds is in a community where they don't have power, then it just becomes people start to get very antsy about that, and it makes everything more difficult. So we viewed restoring those basic services for the people who may not have been affected as much as someone, let's say, on Fort Myers Beach, as really essential to our efforts to bring as much power and resources to bear on the folks who directly suffered the most.
Well, Governor DeSantis, that brings me to an important point, which is when a commander, and you were the commander, approaches an operation, he has specific objectives. He has an intent. And what I'm reading from you is your intent was we need to immediately restore power. We need to immediately conduct search and rescue operations. We need to immediately rebuild vital logistics lines, that is, bridges and roads and things. Did you formally set out your intent? How did you tell your people, gentlemen, ladies, this is what I want, and I want it now?
Yeah, well, this is something that we prepare for. And so we go through exercises every year. We have done, you know, the media was talking about this being a storm hitting Tampa Bay, which is a very vulnerable part of our state to things like storm surge. So we've done Category 5 exercises about a hurricane going into, say, Tampa Bay, which people say would be the worst case. So these are things that we have ballgamed in the past. And my director of emergency management knows very clearly, you know, that our priorities are, of course, the protection of life and the rescue operations. Now, leading into a hurricane, we declare a state of emergency, allows us to marshal resources. It also allows the local counties to marshal resources. And they all have emergency management departments. They've got a lot of people who are very experienced in these things and do a very good job. A lot of the pre-storm stuff, we're in more of a support role. If they need resources, we can surge it to them. But they're the ones that are, say, orchestrating shelters if they call for an evacuation. So a lot of that is kind of bottom up as the storm's coming. And then once that storm hits, it's really us leading the response. And yes, protection of life first and foremost, but then getting these vital arteries of transportation back and making sure that we can restore power, very, very important. You know, there's going to be people who are still displaced. We have places that they can go and all this, but to get the power and to get the bridge, you know, we had two bridges knocked out in Southwest Florida. There was one bridge going to Pine Island, and they were actually being told by some of the folks locally, hey, you guys got to get off the island. This is going to take 6 months to be able to get a solution here. So they came to me this is a couple of days after the storm. They said, can you help us? And I'm like, yeah, I'll help. What can we do? So we looked into, do you do like a barge for them? And I'm like, well, what about if we just try to repair this thing? And so we sent engineers down and they're like, yeah, we think we can do a temporary bridge here. So we said we were going to do it. 3 days later, we were able to open it to the public and they were able to get back and forth to the mainland. And that basically saved the island, because if they weren't able to get back and forth, you know, basically would have just withered. We also have a causeway going to Sanibel Island, which was severed in three different places. And so we did the Pine Island and we said, we've got to do Sanibel. It's a little bit tougher task, but we're going to do it. Last Tuesday, we were able to bring hundreds of power trucks across this refurbished Sanibel Causeway after less than 2 weeks of it being severed. And this week, we are going to open it, be able to open it for all civilian traffic to be able to get back and forth through the island. So those are things where if you let islands like that toil and they don't have the ability to get the resources they need, you know, they can basically wither. And so I thought it was very important that we be able to restore a sense of at least somewhat normalcy for them. And Pine Island's really coming back strong. Sanibel had really bad damage, so there's going to be a lot of TLC that's needed there. But if we had just left that for 6 months with people only being able to get back and forth through boats, I guarantee you the recovery on that would have been at probably an insurmountable mountain. Now, we've had power people working. We've had people working on the infrastructure now for weeks, and we were helicoptering in people before we did the causeway. So now you have the prospect of bringing this place back to life. And it's very important, but you got to act quickly, because if you let it toil, I think the odds of it coming back strongly, I think, go down dramatically.
Well, Governor DeSantis, one of the things that people are yearning for is basic competence out of our government, the ability to actually perform, especially under pressure when it's an emergency. And I think the fact that the mainstream media is not talking about Hurricane Ian anymore demonstrates that you and your team, because this is a team effort, as you've recognized, have performed very, very well. One of the things a commander sometimes has to do is be unreasonable. That is to tell people, I need X done, even though maybe your people don't think it can be done. Is that kind of how you got these infrastructure repairs done? I want this island connected. I want you to get it fixed. Figure it out. I want it done. Get it done. Is that how you approached it?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, basically, we say that, you know, red tape is just unacceptable in situations like this. And if you think about the bridges that we've done already, there's states in this country where they wouldn't have even had a plan to fix it for 6 months. I mean, that's just the reality. And so we were not going to do that. You know, we used to in this country be able to do big things very quickly. We've lost that in many respects. And so we just said, I don't want to hear any excuses. Don't worry about the bureaucracy. Don't worry about the red tape. We still, you know, when you do these projects, I mean, they still did like an emergency bid. So companies could bid their services, but they did it very quickly, and they said time is of the essence, and that was a very important component of this. So, yeah, you cannot be ground down in bureaucracy and red tape, but that's part of the reason why you have the streamlined chain of command, where it's the governor, the emergency management director, and then every other state agency basically at the disposal of the emergency response.
Governor DeSantis, you mentioned the line of lineman trucks, and I remember that visual, and it's struck me as very, very powerful. You know, again, Americans are yearning for competence, and seeing that line sent a message of competence. I watched what you did. You were out there at like the Waffle House cooking. Yep. You were doing press conferences. How important is it for a governor in a disaster to get out there and show people that normalcy is coming back, that things are under control, that things are getting done?
Well, I just think if you end up where the population just kind of gets mired in a sense of hopelessness, like has happened in other storms in our country, you know, in my lifetime, that just makes everything so much more difficult. Now, the folks that got hit the worst in Southwest Florida, I mean, these are good, solid, very resilient people. So we were fortunate in the sense that these people bounce back by their nature. But to be down there and say, hey, things are going to come back. We want to have a rapid recovery. In fact, you know, I was at the Waffle House, but I remember even the next day after the storm, you had things like Wawa open down there. Now, contrast that. They can be open in Florida less than 24 hours after almost a Category 5 storm hits, yet in Philadelphia, they can't open because of all the crime, you know, in the streets and stuff. And so it's really a sharp contrast between more of a can-do spirit, not just on the part of the government, but on the part of folks in the private sector. And so that made a huge difference when you could go to the supermarket. Publix was open. It's our biggest supermarket chain. They were open Friday morning for a storm that left Wednesday evening in places like Cape Coral, which is pretty close to ground zero. So I think that that made a big, big difference. And I think it's helped people be able to do what they need to do to get their own families back on their feet. I mean, you have people, maybe they had roof damage, maybe they had some flood damage, but they can save their home, but it's still an uncomfortable thing. And so having all those other services and everything kind of pop back quicker than I think anybody would have predicted, I think it just makes everything better in terms of the overall morale of the effort.
Now, Governor DeSantis, in any military operation, you have what we call friction. That is little things that take away from your focus, take away from your ability to plan and execute. One of the things that you had was unique. You had politics in the sense that you were also running for election at this time. You were dealing with some localities that may have had people who are political opponents. You're also dealing with a federal government, which is held by a different political party. How did you navigate that challenge in executing the Hurricane Ian operation?
Well, with respect to the White House, the media on, I think it was the Monday before the storm hit on a Wednesday, it was like Monday afternoon, and they said, you know, Biden is calling these Democrat mayors in Tampa Bay, but he refuses to talk to the governor. So I was asked about a press conference, and I said, guys, nobody has done more to stand up against Biden's policies than us here in Florida, and we're proud of that. But at the same time, I've got people's lives and property and livelihoods in jeopardy, and I'm not going to play politics with that. So my phone line is open. We want all the support we can get from all the various levels of government, and we need to move forward in one team. And there's a time to do all the political stuff, but then there's a time to say, you know, let's work together. And honestly, I mean, you know, to their credit, I mean, we worked very well with FEMA, worked incredibly well with the Coast Guard. So I think we were able to minimize some of that friction. And I think at the end of the day, of course, you know how the national media in particular deals with this. I remember when I got elected governor, before I took office, one of the other governors, experienced governor, told me, like, yeah, anytime you have any of these big events in your state, if it's just kind of the local, the press, you know, it'll be relatively normal. The minute the nationals come in, it's all about driving their agenda. And all they care about is whatever hook they can use to advance the narratives that they're seeking to do. And so we knew, you know, when you get some of these national outlets, and they were trying to find a negative narrative. They wanted to be able to advance an agenda. And my view on that is like, look, just work hard, do the job, get things done, and let the chips fall where they may.
Well, you certainly did, Governor DeSantis. I think you did an outstanding job. I was inspired, and I spent a lot of time doing that job, so I think I got a pretty good perspective of it. Thank you very much, Governor DeSantis, for those leadership hints and that discussion. This is the Hugh Hewitt radio program. I think that was, Duane, I think that was one of the most interesting.
Just confidence. You could tell
exactly.
He knew exactly what the deal was.
I felt like sometimes when you're in the military, the organization you're in it doesn't function well.
Right.
You're either in a building mode or a maintaining mode. And
you're either somebody that knows the problem set and knows how to get the actual elements in place to do it, rather than just talk at 30,000 feet.
Yeah.
He can talk at 30,000 feet.
He can, but he also, I'm a field grade officer. I want to see processes. Okay. I'm not a lieutenant anymore. I'm not tactical. It's not about how I take, you know, that fighting position over there. It is about how I conduct a symphony.
Right.
Which is, a brigade is a symphony, a battalion is a smaller symphony. State is huge.
But he also knows how to be a section leader, and he knows how to resonate with a Trump, trumpet player over here, and a clarinet player over there.
Exactly. I think he really understood his role, which was, empowering, saying his intent.
Right.
He really focused on, I want X done. This is our priority. You are going to, in 3 days, you're going to have that road open. And then we're going to show the people of Florida 200 lineman trucks crossing that bridge. As that sends a message that government can work. Look, I'm not a government guy, but there are certain operations I expected to be able to pull off competently. Military operations, disaster relief operations.
You remember after the LA earthquake, the bad one in Somar where we lost?
I was there.
Okay, when the 14
yes.
fell, right?
Yes.
And what did Pete Wilson?
He said, and the 10. Because
right.
I actually drove under that bridge every day. Going to my law office.
They put a bounty on it saying, this is not going to be down for 5 years.
No, this is going to get done.
This is going to get
done. And it got done.
And it got done.
Leadership is about sometimes telling people, you're going to do something you don't think you can do. Everyone on earth was probably telling Ron DeSantis, there's no way that within 1 week we can fix this problem. And part of a commander's job is to say, you either do more than you think you can, or I'm going to find the guy who can.
The fact that people were able to now drive onto Sanibel Island and back. I've been on that island, and it took a direct hit, and it leveled the place. And the fact that they could drive that causeway, I've driven that causeway.
Yeah.
It's remarkable.
Yeah, I think it was, and again, I'm trying to be objective here. Anyway, while we're here, I want to tell you a little about ADF. Alliance Defending Freedom. Hugh Hewitt's campaign to help ADF is underway. It's the world's largest nonprofit legal organization. It's committed to protecting religious freedom, and they've won 14 cases at Supreme Court. I'm a lawyer. That's a big deal. There are new academic outrages all the time, and challenges to religious freedoms are arising every day. So we need your support at HughHewitt.com. Just click on the Alliance Defending Freedom banner, make your tax-deductible gift in any amount. Tyson Langhofer's head of ADF's Academic Freedom Program. He previously spent 16 years at a top law firm.
About 7 years ago, I joined ADF because, I really want my kids to understand and realize the same freedoms that I have. These are eroding over time, and I don't want that. I don't want my kids to experience a less free society than what I did. And so, I joined ADF, and I love being able to stand up, not just for their rights, but for everybody's rights. When they get a victory, it's a victory for everybody.
Will you do what Tyson Langhofer did? Will you stand up for the academic freedom and religious rights of your kids or grandkids by going to HughHewitt.com, making a gift to ADF? Right now, a generous donor will match your gift 100%. It'll match your gift. You can't pass up this opportunity. You're doubling your support. If you prefer to call in your gift, just phone 855-374-4123. That's 855-374-4123 to stand with Alliance Defending Freedom. All right, folks, we've got more with Ron DeSantis that's coming up after the break here on the Hugh Hewitt Radio Program. I'm guest host Kurt Schlichter. This was some great stuff for me because I did disaster operations. I was in the Los Angeles riots as a lieutenant. I was in the Los Angeles earthquake, I think as a captain. And then as a lieutenant colonel, I commanded two reinforced battalions in northern San Diego during the fire crisis. I planned operations. I executed operations, and what I saw with Hurricane Ian was outstanding. You are going to want to hear every word of this important interview. Stick around on the Hugh Hewitt Radio Program.
Hey, it's Hugh Hewitt. Don't go anywhere. Kurt will be right back. I got to tell you about all of our wonderful sponsors, being with DrMartyPets.com/Hewitt. DrMarty, PETS.com/Hewitt. I saw Ralphie last week when I was back inside the Beltway before I went on the Battleground Tour. He's so excited. I told him that my Dr. Marty pet liver treats are coming, so he's very excited. Ralphie loves me. Grand dog, my only grand dog ever. Ralphie loves me. He cannot wait for the Dr. Marty pet food to arrive at the Hewitt household inside the Beltway when he comes and stays. He'll be with me on Halloween because, of course, dogs go crazy on Halloween if a lot of kids are coming to the door, so he's going to spend Halloween night with me. Let me tell you this. DrMartyPets.com/you is exactly what you want. Lassie 1 and Lassie 2, owned by Dwayne, much beloved this food. They just cannot get over this food. It is also, text my name, Hewitt, H-E-W-I-T-T, to 511-511 if you want additional information. Some text charges may apply. You'll get one additional message. I'm obliged to say that by the copy, but mostly go to DrMartyPets.com. DrMartyPets.com/Hewitt. And then don't forget, I got it right here, ReliefFactor.com, wherever I am, whatever city I am, whether I'm stopping at an airport in between cities. I've been everywhere, man, in the last week, and I continue to do that. ReliefFactor.com goes with me, and I take it with me joyfully, gladfully, and I take it every morning. I put it in my doc kit when I travel so I don't forget when I shave. Take the ReliefFactor.com. You'll feel a lot better by the end of the day when you do. ReliefFactor.com is still $19.95. $19.95. What a deal. But you got to take it to enjoy it. ReliefFactor.com helps the body's natural anti-inflammatory properties function better. Every doctor I've said says Icarian, curcumin, resveratrol, and omega ought to be in your diet. Well, do it the easy way. Do it with the very, very easy to take ReliefFactor.com. They go down well with cold coffee. I take it every morning. ReliefFactor.com. Come right back for more of Kurt Schlichter right now.
The Hugh Hewitt Show is now available on TV. Go to SalemNewsChannel.com or download the app. You can also watch on Roku and Fire Stick. Salem News Channel, the antidote to the mainstream media.
The Hugh Hewitt Show on the Salem Radio Network returns from break in 3 minutes and 15 seconds. The Hugh Hewitt Show on the Salem Radio Network.